TechCast Episode 2, Cybersecurity and AI, hosted by Brian Kinane, co-founding partner at Sure Valley Ventures, along with co-host Tom Winifred, founder of Share Profits. They are joined by special guest Ronan Murphy, founder and executive chairman at Smart Tech 247 and co-founder of AI company Get Visibility.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to TechCast 2, Exploring AI. And this is Brian Kinane, one of your co-hosts, along with Tom Winifred. And we're delighted to continue our journey from last week, where we explored a high-level view of AI to delve into more specific areas where it's having an impact today. Unfortunately, we have a wonderful guest, Ronan Murphy, a leader in cybersecurity and AI, who's going to help us navigate that discussion. So, Ronan, I would love to learn a bit more about you, and maybe you can intro yourself.
Yes, Brian, thank you so much. I'm delighted to be on the second episode of this podcast, and thank you for the warm introduction. I am the founder of Smart Tech 247 and currently the executive chairman. Smart Tech is a global cybersecurity company. We protect some of the world's leading organizations. So we really get to look under the covers in terms of what's happening from a cyber and a technology perspective. And I'm also the co-founder of an AI company called Get Visibility, which is really exciting because we get to work on the cutting edge of artificial intelligence and apply really interesting use cases, again, to some of the biggest data security problems that we see right now in the world across many different industry verticals. So delighted to be on today and delighted to have this conversation.
Ronan, let me kick in with what might be an unfair question, but I'm known for those. Over the past few years, I've followed a number of cybersecurity companies which are listed on the AIM casino. And a lot of them have disappointed in a big way. Is cybersecurity, I understand that it is a threat, but is it not one which has, A, maybe people have got a little bit ahead of themselves in thinking of the size of the market, and B, there are so many companies out there doing it that really margins just get battered away?
That's a great question. It's a complex question in terms of there's a lot going on. So I'll take my best swing at it, right? So first and foremost, what I would say is that I often compare the cybersecurity industry. It's a bit like cybersecurity is a very broad topic, and people tend to lump a lot of different aspects of security into it. So I often use the analogy of building a house. So you have the guys who put in the foundation, who build the walls, you've got the roofers, you've got the carpenters, you've got the plumbers, you've got the electricians, and so forth. So cybersecurity has many different disciplines and many different specializations. So when you look at different organizations, they are usually subject matter experts in maybe the cloud or maybe vulnerabilities or maybe some sort of software reselling. There's many different moving parts. And you are correct in saying that globally it is a very competitive industry. It is an industry where right now you are seeing a very substantial growth in the sector. I mean, I'm just back from RSA in San Francisco. It's one of the biggest, probably the biggest cybersecurity conference in the world. And there is tremendous growth. And the reason you have this growth is it is a very substantial problem. And that's been driven by, I would say, four or five key challenges that the industry is facing the world economy is facing. The first one is just the scale of attacks that we are seeing. You can rarely open a newspaper now and not read about the next major cyber attack on an organization, and that's been driven by geopolitical issues and so forth. The second issue we're looking at is there is huge technology sprawl. And by that, I mean organizations are trying to drive operational efficiency by investing in technology, by investing in new applications, by investing in the cloud. But every time you invest in new technology, you are also introducing risk into the enterprise, which is a problem. You then have organizations buying all of these different tools to try and protect their businesses. So they invest in technology for the cloud, technology for their applications, technology for their endpoint, technology for their servers, and it's an endless list of investment in different areas. And finally, you have a huge skills shortage. Globally, it's estimated there's over 2.5 million vacancies in cybersecurity. So companies are struggling with all of these problems. And the ultimate result in that is that there's a very huge increase in the volume of cyber attacks taking place. So the companies on AIM who have not done well, I haven't followed them. But what I would probably say is that they struggled to ever crack the enterprise market. So to try and get large global corporations as customers, you need to be in the right place at the right time. You need the right value proposition. You need to be resourced in terms of your capability to service them. And I think if you can crack into that market, you can then very quickly grow your business. Business and you should be successful. It would be interesting to see how many of the companies that you referenced have been successful in signing global contracts with large corporations. So I think that's
aren't there also quite a lot of cybersecurity companies who are targeting not large global corporations but much smaller SMEs? We, you know, I run one and we're always getting offers of assistance with that. But it is just this competitive market. I can accept that if you're, you know, Marks and Spencers or something, you will have your own in-house departments and they will know what they're talking about. If you're a smaller business, I get bamboozled when I have a sweet-talking salesman trying to sell me a security product because the truth is I haven't got a Scooby. Isn't that, and therefore, the difference between a good product and a bad product isn't so good. You have lots of people, and that is going to put a squeeze. Price will become a pressure. And secondly, and I do wonder about this, is in an economic slowdown, and we might say that we're pretty close to an economic slowdown, isn't cybersecurity the sort of thing that people, maybe mistakenly, will think, we've cut our PR budget, let's cut our cybersecurity budget, let's focus on other things. Isn't that a danger, a macro risk?
No, I would disagree. So again, your question, I think there's several teams running through that question, right? So I'm going to try and dissect it and present my view on it. I would start off firstly and foremost by saying that there is actually huge opportunity in the SME sector. But in order to effectively monetize the opportunity of the SME sector, organizations have to have a very robust and standardized and simplified offering. So they need to go to that sweet talking sales guy who approaches you. He needs to be in a position where he can take all of your pain points in terms of what's required from a cyber perspective and deliver it absolutely seamlessly through a SaaS offering. In order for an organization to successfully scale in the mid-market sector, they have to have a very robust technology delivery capability, which has to predominantly be SaaS, because these guys don't have their own, a lot of them don't have their own servers and networks. And it has been demonstrated that companies who can consolidate, simplify and standardize their operations for the mid-market can actually do very well. I would argue that not many companies have built that technology layer effectively for the mid-market section. And therefore, there is a huge untapped opportunity. To the second part of your question, I don't believe that the cyber budgets are going to get cut. If anything, I believe they're going to increase. And the predominant reason for that is that the regulatory landscape has become incredibly punitive for organizations. You have the macro regulatory trends that we're all very familiar with, like GDPR or CCPA. But what you're also seeing is that at a verticalized level, they are becoming punitive for organizations who are responsible for holding data specifically related to the industry. So you're seeing.
So what was CCPA? I thought it was the Chinese Communist Party.
No, that's the California Consumer Privacy Act. So,
okay,
for example,
all right, okay,
yeah. They're all regulations that overlay organizations that touch data. But my point is that depending on what industry vertical you work in, you're no longer just looking at GDPR. You're now also looking at regulations that are specific to your industry. And in every single one of those regulations, I can promise you there's a section in there which relates to the maturity of that organization to implement the security controls that are required to demonstrate compliance. But also, many of these organizations use standards like ISO 27001 or SOC 2 to show that they take security and they take data security seriously. And in all of those standards, they have to demonstrate that they have implemented the correct security and data security controls that are required. That's why, in theory, it's easy to say we've cut our marketing budget, let's cut our security budget. In reality, that is not happening.
Okay. Now, well, this is meant to be a series on artificial intelligence. I would have thought artificial intelligence actually increases the threat of cybersecurity. You don't need to have a farm full of Russian trolls. You can sort of do that artificially. Is artificial intelligence a bigger threat to firms in terms of security?
Yeah, it's a great question. I believe that right now there is huge benefits associated with the ability to use AI in data security and in cybersecurity. But you're absolutely on point when you say there's also very substantial risks. I would argue that artificial intelligence has commoditized at a very large scale the ability to attack organizations using cybercrime. And by that, what I mean is that you can now very quickly and effectively build malicious software using AI. You can automate a lot of attacks using AI. You can understand and exploit vulnerabilities in code using AI. So that obviously presents very substantial risk. And I guess it gets even more sinister insofar as you can poison AI. If you can successfully attack a company's own artificial intelligence model that they're using to power their business, there's all sorts of sinister ways that you can use AI for nefarious purposes. But I would balance that by saying that effective use of AI can also make organizations much better at detecting these type of attacks.
Let's go to the threat first. How specifically would a malicious creator of AI attack a business, attack a retail business? I mean, let's say we want to bring down Next. How would you use AI to bring down Next?
Yeah. So I mean, I give you something. I'm not sure if I should be talking too openly about these types of.
Oh no, be indiscreet. We like that.
Yeah, strategies for people. But let me give you an example. You pick a specific industry vertical. It would be very quick for you to determine the types of software that they use within that industry, right? There's different for point of sale. There's different software for stock taking. There's different payroll systems and so forth that they use, and applications for their e-commerce. You could start profiling those different applications using artificial intelligence to understand where there's potential vulnerabilities across those different types of software. You could use AI to start figuring out how you could build exploits for those specific types of software. You could use AI to automate the attacks that you're using to target those types of organizations. You could use AI to mimic communication from senior executives to staff within those organizations. There's lots of different techniques that could be used if you were building a targeted campaign for a specific industry vertical.
Is there any comeback? I mean, surely, as I discussed with Brian the other week, there's no real comeback here. If you say that we'll do this after this podcast, let's bring down a FTSE 100 company. You say that you can do that. You say you can counter it, but it's going to be an ongoing battle, isn't it? Forever.
Yeah, I mean, this the problem with cyber is that there's a lot of snake oil salesmen who will tell you, I have a silver bullet that's going to fix your cyber problem. If that was the case, there would not be an industry. You'd implement a cyber bullet and it would be fixed. Cyber security is incredibly complex. There's lots of moving parts and it will never end. It is an ongoing process. It's a game of chess that goes on forever. What I would say is that I often would use the analogy, right? If I'm with Brian and we're running through a forest being chased by a bear, I don't need to be faster than the bear. I just need to be faster than Brian, right? Because he's got a dodgy knee and the bear.
Yeah, he's just come out of hospital. You're the winner there.
Yeah, the bear's going to eat him, right? And I'm gone and I get away. I often use that analogy because I think it's similar to cybersecurity because depending on the vertical you're in, if you're in finance or retail or manufacturing or healthcare or whatever it is, there's so much low-hanging fruit out there in terms of organizations who haven't implemented the correct controls or not on top of their game. You just need to be better than those guys. And if you are, the bad guys will target the lowest hanging fruit. They'll target the people who have not implemented the correct controls, who do not know what they're doing, because it's just easier. And therefore, organizations don't need to be perfect. But if they implement a very good baseline capability and they improve it over time, the chances of them actually having a breach gets substantially reduced. And there is, I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years and I've never seen a scenario where an organization isn't implementing the correct level of controls that are required to give themselves a good security maturity posture. Most companies that experience a devastating breach have experienced it because they haven't done the foundational layer right. And that's a huge percentage of organizations globally.
But if one signs up with you or another provider, it's not an instant silver bullet. It should be a recurring part of your budget.
It is a recurring part of your budget and it is not a silver bullet. It is a continuous evolution of your cybersecurity maturity to ensure you're dealing with not just the legacy type of threats that are out there, but also the future looking attacks, which are going to emanate from Russia or China or North Korea or wherever they come from. And they are continuous. They are continually evolving. But I mean, we're also evolving. We're also building capability and using AI to help organizations stave off these attacks and stay ahead of the curve. We've some of the best people in the world whose jobs it is to do that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Always too easy to demonize Russia and China. And I admit that both of them have done a few things which aren't very good. But aren't there quite a lot of sort of homegrown cybersecurity criminals in the West?
There sure is. And it's back to one of my points at the beginning of the podcast. Cyber security or the cyber crime industry has become commoditized. So you have a whole ecosystem on the dark web of buyers and sellers of software who have customer support and who have trouble ticketing and have training and have loyalty programs where they sell a different capability in a menu type service in the dark web. As you can imagine, many of the customers in that scenario are organized crime syndicates across Europe, are fraudsters, are home hackers. So yeah, you're right. There's a huge percentage of it is homegrown and generates from here. But I would say from an industrial complex perspective, that doesn't even come remotely close to the scale of attacks that we're seeing from Russia or China or North Korea, because they have massive call centers with hundreds of people whose job it is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to either extort people by encrypting their systems and stealing their data to generate crypto, or to steal intellectual property from multinationals so that they can manufacture that IP themselves. So there's many different threat actors representing many different stakeholders in many different parts of the globe.
When did you've been in cybersecurity for 20 years? When did you start talking about AI?
Yeah, so I mean, AI has been around. It's been around for many years, but it's really got exciting in the last number of years because of the internet. We now have so much data that allows companies like Google and Microsoft and OpenAI and Facebook and so forth to generate what we call large language models. And effectively, what this is, and I think Brian spoke very eloquently about this in the first podcast, is the collection of huge amounts of data from the internet and allowing organizations to take that data and deliver outputs from it, which it's incredibly powerful. We are a big proponent of AI for many different reasons, but we can't build a large language model because we don't have enough data, but neither would we ever want to build a large language model because they're huge, they're very expensive to build, and there's huge amounts of data in them. But where we specialize is we specialize in what are known as narrow language models, or they could also be referred to as kind of domain-specific models. Now, what these are designed to do is to take a problem statement that an organization has in a specific vertical and to allow them to use artificial intelligence for their very specific problems. So we take the information from these large language models that are out there, and we allow organizations to really get a high level of performance from AI in narrow models. So
But
it's
if it's sorry to interrupt you, Ronan, but if it's a relatively narrow model, why can't you just have it's a small thing. What's the advantage of having AI at its current stage of development as opposed to a team of expert human beings?
Okay. So when I say a narrow model, the scale of a narrow model is still enormous. You
Okay.
know, it's doing the work of 50 people, but it's less than 0.1% of a large language model, right? So we're talking about very substantial scale here. An organization who's got 50,000 employees can implement a narrow language model to do the work that would ordinarily take the work of 50 people to do, right? For a specific use case, that use case might be identifying where your data is, cataloging that data, classifying that data, and ensuring that data is secure from hackers, which is a very complicated task and a very labor-intensive task to implement if you do not have artificial intelligence to fix that problem. So these narrow models, I'll give you a good example. You might be an organization working in the defense sector. You might touch very sensitive information about nuclear schematics or confidential information for the military. And you may want to understand where that data is, what the data is comprises of, how sensitive that data is, what type of security controls you should have on that data. And you can train narrow language models specifically for the military defense sector to understand that data and to action that data depending on what it is you want to achieve with it. That's incredibly powerful. So they are some of the very powerful use cases that can be used for these narrow language models, and also benefit from the scale of the large language models that are out there. So it's a game changer. I mean, it's an absolute game changer on so many levels. It's unbelievably positive, I would say, for organizations.
Can I just come back to this human thing, though? Where in the process does the human fit in?
Yes, so it's multi-touch, right? I mean, if you take, for example, in our security operation centers around the world, we would have initially had humans doing very remedial tasks of looking at data and deciding on what should happen based on that data. I would say they were low paid, and the output of their work was, it was marginally valuable, but it was still important for workflows that we were implementing. The fact that we have been able to use artificial intelligence to now complete those tasks, these employees have now moved up the value chain. They get better pay, and they move into areas that are more complex, that require a human being's interaction on either specific training sets for artificial intelligence or other areas of the business. So AI for us has been transformative and continues to be transformative on a number of different areas. Firstly, our speed, our accuracy, our ability to provide valuable outputs for our customer, but also to take existing resources. Remember, I said there's 2.5 million job vacancies in cyber, so it's hard to find good people. Take people from more remedial tasks and put them in more high value tasks within the business. So with AI, and this, I think this is an important, this may be what you're asking me, Tom. With AI, human beings, there's a lot of human beings required, right? So you need them for the plumbing, you need them to build the systems that can take the AI and the models and the data and process them and so forth. You also need humans to provide a degree of supervised learning in the early stage of AI. So you need, it's like a child, you need to teach it how to read and teach it how to walk and give it a set of data to ingest and make sure it's understanding it properly. And that's an iterative process that continues over time. So human beings are always in the loop at some level. You don't, you know, this isn't Terminator, right? This stuff isn't in at a position where it's going to, you know, it's going to eat the world anytime soon in terms of, you know, taking
off. I was going to pick you up on that. It may not eat the world anytime soon, but looking forward a bit further, and maybe Brian, because he has been described as a visionary of AI, I think, albeit by himself, but I might want to come in here. You say there's a 2.5 million job shortage now, but in, let's say, 10 years' time, 2033, will there be a 2.5 million job shortage, or won't AI, given the speed of development? And I was looking that AI sitting GCSEs 5 years ago would have got a C or a D. These days, it would, like everybody else, got an A star. There's been even more grade inflation. In 10 years' time, AI have advanced so much that actually that skill shortage has disappeared? You need far fewer humans.
Yeah, like Brian, you can come in a moment. I just want to make one observation on that, right? So, the problem in my mind, right, is that if you have artificial intelligence bots or automation attacking your organization, right, there's somebody building that. There's somebody building either the defenses or the attack. They're training their AI and they're orchestrating a specific line of attack using that technology, right? So there's a human being has decided to train it and build it and use it for whatever purposes they want to use it. But if it's all AI, then humans will figure out a way to attack it or subvert it in other means. So you're always going to require humans when it comes to cybersecurity. You're always going to require them at some level, given the nature of and the complexity of the problem that you're facing. So you will, in my mind, you will definitely, it's moving very fast. I will acknowledge that, right? And it is having huge impacts. But as far as...
You're always going to require humans at the top level, but aren't all of the sort of, at the moment, you've taken out humans at the very bottom level. But as AI develops, if it continues to develop at the current rate, you would be taking out a hell of a lot more humans. It will solve the skills shortage, won't it?
Yeah, I think it'll solve the skills shortage. I absolutely agree with you, but I do believe the skills will move in other areas because technology as a whole is moving at such a pace that workers are just moving to more high-paid, more sophisticated roles within organizations. And I mean, it's a great advert for why people should understand AI and they should understand the opportunities that it's going to present, as well as the threats, I would argue, that it's going to present. But, you know, if you look back in 1920, the jobs that people did in 1920, 90% of them are gone because technology evolves. It's the same now. You know, you need to keep an eye on this technology. You need to understand where the opportunities are going to present themselves.
And just, Brian, can you comment both on the jobs, but also just a hazard a guess? How many of the firms involved in AI-based cybersecurity that are operating now will be operating in 10 years' time?
Well, I can make a few comments, Tom. So firstly, Yes, of course. What AI is doing is it's approximating human knowledge, and it's automating that approximation. And as it automates the approximation of that knowledge, the people that were doing that knowledge then can be, to a degree, replaced by these autonomous systems. But with cybersecurity, if you think about it this way, if I invent a tank to attack your business, and you still insist on using horses and soldiers on foot, you're going to be in trouble. And in the cybersecurity world, if people deploy advanced systems and AI systems to attack businesses, the speed and scale at which they attack, humans on their own will not be capable of stopping them. So you have to match fire with fire. So companies, I think, have no choice but to increasingly automate their cybersecurity. It's an inevitable requirement. In terms of the skills of people, increasingly what will happen there is I think people will move more to policy type roles, guiding AI systems, and basically setting out guidelines and rules for them and interacting with them. And that'll be an entirely new skill. In fact, there's a new job specification called prompt engineer, which is a new type of job, which is how to talk logically to AI systems. And that's an entirely new category of employment now that is available to people. So there will be, as always, a reaction where skills will shift, training will be important, and the premium to those new skills will be very high. But skills that have not evolved will obviously be vulnerable to automation, in the same way that if you look at in a shop today, you have less people manning tills, and most of the tills are fully automated. And those particular type of skills have switched to become more like customer service and customer engagement skills within the shopping experience. And then thinking about companies in the future, there will be a lot of flux in this space for sure, because it's a new space and there's going to be a lot of change. But what's interesting already is, I think, Ronan, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this. When I've been looking at this field, only maybe 6 months ago, people thought the field of AI and security in particular and infrastructure would be dominated by the large players, the Googles, the Metas. Now there's a countervailing argument saying that those players are in trouble because of the incredible proliferation of AI models and narrow models. It means that they don't have any moat to defend their businesses anymore. And it could, in fact, see an explosion of new companies to the detriment of the traditional large tech players. So there's really a huge amount of uncertainty in how it's going to play out. But I find it's kind of mind-blowing, that shift alone, from perceiving that the large players would dominate to perceiving that they're vulnerable. And that's really occurred in the last 6 months. And that just shows the level of fluidity and flux in the space. And I don't think anybody can really predict how it's going to play out at all, other than...
Doesn't that make investing in the space almost impossible?
Well, I wouldn't say that, because what I would say is if I would say as a thesis for investing, and this is where I like Ronan's company Get Visibility, if you find a clear problem that is being solved, that has business value, has clear economic impact on the business, and has an order of magnitude transformational value from the use of AI, that business will be valuable in all evolutions of the AI stack, in my opinion. So if I was looking for companies that I think can, you know, exist into the future, are companies that are starting from the perspective that they're solving a very clear business problem. And in solving that problem, they're using AI in a transformational way to achieve economies of scale that weren't previously possible. And what led me to, with Piras and Sure Valley, to invest and Get Visibility was when I met Ronan. He explained that a typical consulting firm would need 30 to 40 people and 6 months to do a full audit of a company's data exposure. And then that an AI system could do it in a day. That kind of blew my mind, actually, conceptually. And then I said, that's amazing value to be created. And therefore, I think that company, that type of company, where it's solving a real business problem that has real economic value and can make major order of magnitude economic impact on it, those companies will be valuable in however the AI stack evolves.
But Brian, can I just, I think Ronan may have answered this, but Let us say that I was providing a service and it would require 40 people for 6 months. You pitch up and say, actually, my AI can do it in one day. You're going to charge a bit less than I would have charged, but so it's a cost saving for the customer. But what's to stop Ronan then pitching up and saying, actually, I can do it too. I've got AI, I can do it too. And the margins just being whittled away as someone else pitches up with another package.
Well, I'll answer briefly and then I'll hand over to Ronan. So first of all, what you're really asking is, what is the competitive moat that defends a company operating in the AI space?
Yes.
Stops it being commoditized. And there's a couple of things. One is proprietary data sets. So the specialist players can over time build up proprietary data that's not publicly available, which immediately puts a new player at a disadvantage. Secondly, putting in place deep human reinforcement learning and guardrails and rules around the AI to make sure it works correctly and determinatively within the particular business problem and it doesn't produce random incorrect outputs. Thirdly, protections to make sure the AI system itself is not vulnerable, right? And fourthly, building in a lot of domain experience linked specifically to the business problem. These are all complicated things. And if I was hiring a firm, I would happily pay a premium to know that those have been solved and I wasn't experimenting on a firm that wasn't as good at them.
Couldn't I just get back on this. You have all of those four planks in place that you think is your moat. If I had enough capital, couldn't I throw that capital and overcome your moat?
So the difference there, I would say, is that if I was building a generic product and it was just a matter of code years, then if I throw enough capital, I can build it. But the problem is it's the network effect of building the proprietary data sets. They can't just be replaced with capital. You need to go through the learning curve. And the capital won't really accelerate you through the learning curve because the learning curve is based on actually collecting this data, processing it, applying reinforcement learning, developing the narrow model, testing. You still have to do all that, no matter how much capital you have. And remember, AI expertise is in short supply. So even trying to get the staff with the relevant level of knowledge is very challenging. So I think having a reputation and an experience and a track record and the provable application of the narrow models is a major moat. That's a lot bigger, I would think, than a lot of traditional companies where their only moat was the sophistication of their software stack, which ultimately can be replaced and increasingly easily due to AI, which is automating a lot of software development. Ronan, I'd be interested in your thoughts. I've kind of waffled on with my opinion, but you're right there at the coalface.
Yeah, look, I think you've given a very eloquent answer, Brian. I think the problem of if I rock up with, you know, wheelbarrows of cash, I'm going to put you out of business. I mean, you could apply that to any industry anywhere in the world, whether you're in a restaurant or a dry cleaners. But in fact, I think with AI and with data, you build a very, very defensible moat. I want to give you two examples, right? The first example I'm going to give you is Smartech 247, which is an AIM listed company. And Smartech is doing exceptionally well on AIM, and we're very happy with the performance. But we are winning amazing contracts with some of the world's biggest companies. And I'm going to give you an example. One particular organization, a company called Aptiv, they have 200,000 employees, they're over a 20 billion revenue company. And we were very successful in winning that contract, a multi-year contract for their global cybersecurity in Smartech 247 because of our ability to demonstrate capabilities around our security offering and our artificial intelligence, and our ability to streamline operations by using all of these technologies, improved performance, faster training, better interoperability across their systems, and better resource utilization. But once we win a large client in that specific sector, which is automotive manufacturing, within a few months, we won a contract with AutoNation, and they're a company in Florida. They're 30 billion revenue. They're Fortune 130. They're one of the leading companies in North America, again, in the automotive industry. And there's an effect that starts because as you collect data from those specific organizations, as you fine tune the artificial intelligence and your workflows, your ability to become an expert in those specific sectors increases, and your ability to monetize your service delivery and so forth becomes better. So that's an example of how we build our moat in those very large corporations who are entrusting us to protect them from a cybersecurity perspective, and how AI really helps us. And if I were to talk about Get Visibility.
Ronan, can I just get back to you on that? You said you had a multi-year contract. Are you assuming that at the end of that multi-year contract, they will offer you another multi-year contract?
I've absolutely no doubt whatsoever. I mean, the quality of what we do is world class, and where we have our finger on the pulse with those customers so well that they continually, we meet them every quarter. I mean, we are responsible for keeping them secure. This is high stakes poker. So I would say the quality of what we do is Rolls Royce. And you wouldn't not win these contracts with these clients of that scale, of that magnitude, if what you were delivering was not cutting edge technology and world class service delivery. I mean, these guys.
You would rather worry about an AI company which doesn't get some sort of automatic renewal, wouldn't you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've never once ever churned a customer. We've never lost a client. And the reason we don't lose customers is that we ensure that our service delivery, our technology, our research and development about what they need now, but also what's coming down the tracks is world class. So, that's continuing to grow for us. And I mean, that's been represented in our share price. And, you know, we're only getting started in this, in the enablement of AI for these specific verticals. But I want to talk a moment about Get Visibility, because Brian really touched on that very well. We look at the applicability of AI and narrow models as being an absolute game changer. And we've been saying this for 12 months. Everybody is jumping on it now, and everyone is saying, oh, we think it's going to be narrow models. We've been saying this forever. We've been saying it well before the industry's been saying it. And we know that we can take these huge corpuses of data that are out there that everyone is so excited about, and we can take the sliver of information in those and make it applicable to our clients, depending on what industry they're in. And we provide all of the plumbing, all of the infrastructure, so that they can consume these models very cost effectively. They can demonstrate really valuable outcomes from the technology that we're applying, and they can realize a return on investment in absolutely no time. So, and we're doing that now for over 200 companies. And these, I mean, are some of the biggest companies in the world. Companies like Saudi Aramco use us to look at data, to find it, to catalog it, to classify it, to apply a narrow model training to that data. So it's unbelievably exciting. It's only getting started. It's unbelievably exciting. We've built a really competitive moat where we can go blow to blow with the biggest companies in the world and beat them because of what we've built from a narrow model perspective and a training perspective. So ultimately, I think this sector is so exciting. It feels like we're on day one of an incredible journey ahead of us over the next 12, 24, 36 months.
I hope that listeners have enjoyed three types of Irish accent, and we'll be back with another tech cast shortly.
Thanks, Tom. Super duper.
Okay. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Thanks.